Okay, no problem. It's fine.
Oh, thank you.
I think whoever remembers, we can start. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Let me
just clarify one thing so that we don't become a bit confused. Today, as we would have been aware that it should have been the department that was to come and present its annual report. But unfortunately, they are not, they were not yet ready because of the processes between themselves and the Office of the Auditor General would allow them to finish up and tidy up all the things that they were supposed to do. We then said, let's then bring forward this, the presentation, which was supposed to be done on the 25th of November. The one on the, ask the department to come and take us through on the amendments on COLDA. So that's why we are doing COLDA today. We will then, in communicating with the department and the ministry, we will then circulate a notice on when then they are going to come and present their annual report. So we are here today, and everybody knows the importance of these amendments, as we will understand the outcome of the court on the issue of domestic workers. So I think it's really important that we are not seen as dragging feet, because in whatever we do, it's for the benefit of the ordinary people, most of them, those that are vulnerable. So as we'll be listening to these amendments, members, I think it's important that I remind members that today they're going to present, we will then ask clarity. We are not going to deliberate. We will ask clarities, which their responses, which we must jot down, will assist us as we will then be, among other things, listening to stakeholders. And then, because we will, at the final analysis, we are to sit and deliberate as the committee. So this is the first step that we can't do anything without being taken through and asked clarity by the department. So if members will be tempted or bothering into discussions, I will then have to call them to order, because it's only clarity for now. We're still going to engage vigorously. So having said that, welcoming everybody, and I see welcoming the Deputy Minister and the DG. What we will do, we will then request the Secretariat to take us through on the roll call. And everybody who is here at the appropriate time, who does not, either who is not a member nor a staff of the department, people who then have to identify themselves that I'm Lindelwa Dunjwa, I am coming from Nihau, so that we know who is here and which organization or institution a person is coming from. So I will hand over to you, Mr. Shakaza, to take us through the roll call.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all the members, the Deputy Minister, and the Department of Arts. Chair, we have the first today from the members of the Portfolio Committee on Employment and Labour. We've got Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Mugabe, Honorable Minana, Honorable Ingram, Honorable Castro, Honorable Prado, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Herman. From the staff, compliment, we've got myself, Committee Secretary, we've got the Content Advisor, Mr. Noble, Researcher, Mr. Mukwena, we've got Poshia, the Committee Assistant. Then on apologies, Chair, we have received an apology from the Minister who's attending Cabinet meeting. We also received an apology from Honorable Nonfele and Honorable Ntlawini. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to remind members that at least we honorable, I'm sorry, Mr. Sakaza, just to, let's say, Honorable Dunjwa has been booked off sick, and Honorable Dunjwa has got family responsibility. But we'll deal with that after this meeting. Can I then DM and DG, who from the department is here for now?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I will ask the DG to take us through.
Okay.
On who is here from the department. We are already unable.
Good morning, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. Good morning, DM, and the colleagues. Chairperson, we have Virgil, Mr. Virgil Seafield, who is in charge of our policies division, and we have Mr. Temi Ngosi Mkalipi, who is going to be running the presentation. He's part of the branch that is responsible for policy development in the department. We also have Mr. Wababa, who's our PLO, and we have the Compensation Fund Commissioner, Vuyo Mafata, and we have Zandi, who's from the Office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ. Can they indicate who they are and which organization they are coming from? I see we've got Mr. C, Ted Hope, Mr. Can they please indicate themselves? They know. I don't have to call them.
Chair, sorry, I forgot Karabo from the DM's office as well.
Okay.
Part of our team. Thanks.
Okay. Can the people that are here who know themselves that they don't fall under the ambit of the staff of the Department of Labor? No, they are members. They do have a right to be here, but we must know who are they. Where are they coming from?
Okay, I'd like to introduce myself.
Who are you?
I'm Dr. Esop, E-S-S-O-P. I'm an occupational medicine specialist, and I work for Mediclinic Hospital Group.
Okay. The next one? Who?
I can introduce myself.
Please do.
Geoffrey Nzau, an actuary, fellow of Actuarial Society of South Africa.
You are?
Actuary, fellow of Actuarial Society of South Africa.
And your name is?
Geoffrey Nzau.
Okay. Who's the next? Because if people don't want to introduce themselves when they're here, as they do, because what we're doing is what we usually do when we have committee sittings, physical, that everybody who is in the room must introduce themselves. So even here in virtual, people must do that. And if they're refusing to, if they're refusing to do that, we'll take them off. And I won't be accused. I don't want to be too.
May I introduce myself? My name is Fritz Lettig and I represent Compensation Solutions.
Okay.
Madam Chair, my name is Craig Teller. I'm a chartered accountant and I represent a medical consulting entity.
Okay.
My name is Devil Tasler. I represent Quid Link.
You are?
Devil Tasler.
Oh, okay. Next. There's somebody by GEOFFN. Who is that one?
He just introduced himself as Jeffrey Nzau, Chair.
Oh.
Yes, Chair.
And Ted Hope? Who's Ted Hope?
Chair, my name is Craig Teller. I'm a chartered accountant and I represent a medical consulting company.
Okay. Have they all introduced themselves, Zolan?
Yes, Chair, unless I didn't hear Nosiwatu introduce herself, maybe I was on the phone.
Nosiwaku is from the minister's office.
Oh.
And Sabelo Mali is also the spokesperson for the ministry.
Mr. Hoffman, why are you not introducing yourself? From PMG. If you don't do it again, I'll take you off. I'll tell you the importance. Where's when we are dealing with these matters of this nature? Because people have got some expectations, and when things don't go the way they thought they are to go, they create a scare. We are following processes, and today, I think they've captured it themselves that today is questions of clarity from the to the department, from members. We are not going to, there are no deliberations, no discussions, questions of clarity. So we just want to dot down whoever is here so that when somebody goes outside, which we don't have a control over, we're in a constitutional democracy, people say things. And now we have to answer, but we have to check with this. No, no. So I, when we are dealing with the bills, as a chair, I'm very, I may be seen as being oversensitive. No, it's because I am to, first and foremost, I am to protect the integrity of Parliament through this committee. And I have to also protect members of this committee. So, feel free, but knowing very well that you are here just to listen to what we are saying, and we will explain as we move forward. Thank you very much. DM, is there anything that you want to say before we allow Mr. Seafield?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member. Oh, my God, this is giving me grief again. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Can I be allowed to switch off the camera, Honorable Chair?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, DMU.
Thank you. May do that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Whip of the Committee, Dr. Ngabane, members of the Portfolio Committee, our Director General, Dadila Mati, who just went through a very successful eye operation recently. We wish you speedy recovery, and we are also grateful that you managed to join us, despite the fact that you are officially on sick leave. our Compensation Fund Commissioner, Sabuyo Mafata, and members, officials of the department accompanying the DG, I greet you all, honorable members. I think we all know that 2 weeks ago we had the opportunity to present to this committee the departmental synopsis on the third quarter and fourth quarter reports for assessment. And I must say, honorable members, that this process was very enriching. I'm sure you would agree with me. And I still believe that we need to pursue some further engagement with other departments to find common ground on some of the outstanding issues that might need further engagement, Honorable Chairperson. But I must also mention the fact that the department submitted 2 legislations for Parliament's consideration, which include the Employment Equity and COEDA. Members are aware that last week we briefed the committee on the employment equity, and today we will brief the members on COEDA bill. And there is also one critical issue that I must report about that has forever been in the public discourse, which together with the Department of Home Affairs, as co-chairs of the Interministerial Committee, we have prioritized for the current financial year, which is the migration policy. And I'm confident, Honorable Chairperson, with the work done so far by the Interministerial Committee, that very soon we will have something very solid to report to the Council on this specific piece of legislation. Honorable members will also recall, at least on the COEDA amendment, there is already a Constitutional Court judgment compelling us to provide for the formalization of the domestic worker sector. And the COEDA bill is very important, is a very important document for our department, and its amendments also informed by the consultative work which was done in 2014 and through provincial envisos with the domestic workers sector. It is worth noting, honorable members, also that although the bill addresses the inclusion of domestic workers under the category of employees for purposes of benefits in terms of the Act, there are also other significant amendments proposed by this bill, such as the rehabilitation and reintegration framework of injured employees and those that have recovered from the diseases back into the workforce. And also it deals with inspections, compliance and enforcement issues related to criminal liabilities and administrative penalties, benefit improvements. And I'm sure the DG and the Commissioner Compensation Fund will also take honorable members through the specific amendments proposed by this bill and the process that followed. I must also indicate that the amendment further seeks to address the Constitutional Court judgment compelling the department to formalize the domestic workers sector, something that was grossly overlooked, honorable members, by the previous administrations, including the apartheid government. And we can only be proud, honorable members, that although it took us this long to be where we are with this bill, that finally we are fixing what has been the most significant disservice to those who raised us into the grown-up men and women we are today. And I must say that this is something that was grossly overlooked to the detriment of many lives that were lost in the many domestic workplaces. The case in point here, honorable members, is Mrs. Matlangu's case that led to the Constitutional Court ruling on this matter. And we must thank the Matlangu family for their resilience as the department for standing on the side of the disabled, and also thank all those who stood on the side of the Matlangu family in difficult times. Allow me at this point in time also, honorable chair, also to acknowledge, I'm sure, media consultants, medical consultants who are within the house, who are also coming to listen to the discussions that to ensue. And also allow me at this point to call upon the DG and or including the Compensation Funds Commissioner to lead us with the presentation to this committee. I thank you, Chair, for this time. Thank you.
No, thank you, TM. Before the DG comes in, who is Gumani Chingomela and Henry Mapolokela? Can they introduce themselves and tell us where they are coming from? Because they just came in after we have
Chairperson, my name is Gumani Chimomora. I'm EFF Senior Research in Parliament. supporting committee are causing control in the committee.
Okay. And welcome, and Henry Mapolo Gela. Who's Harry? Is Harry with you, Mr. Kuman?
Chairperson, I'm not aware of who that person is. From the ESF Parliamentary Caucus, it's only 1%.
Okay. Who's Harry?
William Mafateng, Harry Mapologela is a legal officer at the Compensation Fund.
Okay. Can I make in future, as we will be moving forward with the bill, if there are other people, DG or commissioners that you know that, please say that in advance so that we really understand who is here. And for those that... And for those that are coming outside, like the researcher, I think if you can just, Mr. Kuman, in moving forward in future, all researchers, even from the other political parties, if they can just indicate, Harry Kumela making an example, Mr. Kuman, EFF caucus research, just in brackets, so that we are able to pick up and not create a... Having said that...
Chairperson... Apologies. My name is Andrew Petlele from Public Education Office.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we then hand over to the teacher? Teacher?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to ask Mr. Ken Ngosi Mkhalipi to run the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Mkhalipi. Sorry, before you start, Mr. Mkhalipi, everybody, please, even our guest, please mute. Because if you don't mute, you mess up the audio, please. And if people are not muting, muted, I will request Mr. Sakaza, who's the host, to mute them. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Mkhalipi.
Thank you, Chair and DG, the members, and the Deputy Minister. The slide is not moving. Oh, thank you. Sorry. The DM has summarized some of the most important amendments that this bill is introducing, members. The inclusion of domestic workers, the DM has spoken a lot about that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. The reapplication and reintegration framework of injured and diseased employees into the workplace. We are going to be talking about that. The realignment and of enforcement compliance by inspectors, criminal liability and administrative penalties that have been introduced, and the improvement of some benefits in terms of the law. The First Amendment is amending Section 1 of the bill, of the act, the definition, the present definition of the bill, as the Deputy Minister has indicated, exclude domestic workers as employees. It regards domestic workers as not employees, therefore exclude them from the ambit of the law. And to meet the requirement of the Constitutional Court decision, we've changed the definition so that the definition should not have an exclusion. It will just define an employee, just like the LRA defines an employee, just like the BCA defines an employee. Therefore, when you take out the exclusion, it will then mean that domestic workers are included in the ambit of the law. Their employers will have to submit a declaration in terms of the law, just like all other employers.
and if they get injured at work, they can claim for payment from the fund. How that is going to work, the regulation will unpack that. I mean, there are many issues about the information that is needed from domestic workers, but the regulation that will be published in terms of this law, when the law is passed by Parliament and promulgated by the President, will indicate that. The next amendment that we're dealing with, which is a technical amendment, the aligning the issue of the financial year with the Public Finance Management Act. Presently, the financial year it ranges between March in any year and the last day of February in the following year. But now, with the amendment to this, it will be aligned with the Public Financial Management Act. The next change that we're making is also another technical change that changes the terminology in terms of this and replaces, it put a replacement on mandatory and contractors. This creates confusion in the event that the contractor is a subcontractor. Now you need to make that differentiation so that you know exactly who's responsible for whatever you need to do. Now, instead of using the wording mandatar, you'll be using the word contractor and or subcontractor respectively. And it's another technical amendment that we're making. We are making a definition of serious and willful misconduct to remove. We are removing this definition. Because the COIDA, just like the Road Accident Fund, is a no-fault basis legislation. If you get injured at work, whether it's your fault or it's not your fault, you should be able to claim. If you put your hand in a machine that you should, for whatever reason, you're not supposed to put that hand in the machine, and the machine cuts your hand, the company can have a misconduct case against you because you're not supposed to be there, but that should not exclude, take away your right to claim the fact because you are injured at work. The same applies if you drive, you are on the road, you are a pedestrian, you walk on the road, sometimes you might be drunk, you're drinking a lot of alcohol, and the car knocks you. The Road Accident Fund is not going to say, well, you're not supposed to be there in the freeway in the first place, therefore we're not paying. It's a no-fault basis insurance, and that's the same approach that we're taking on COIDA. And that's why we're removing the definition of serious and willful misconduct, which in the current law, if you are injured as a result of your misconduct or serious willful, you will not be able to claim for injuries. Now, with the removal of this, you'll be able to claim. The next amendment we're making is streamlining and making clear on the issues around the composition of the board, setting up numbers, setting up the terms of office of board members, and how would the board members would be removed and disqualified for serving in the commission, and those are the issues in terms of the board. Now, NEDLAC will be nominating, as it does now, members, and the board will be chaired by an independent, non-voting chairperson. Presently, the board is chaired by a chairperson that is appointed by the minister, and that chairperson can be somebody from the department, and as the current chairperson is. With the new provisions, now the board will be chaired by an independent chairperson who does not have a right to vote. The issue around the accountability, the DG will still have the right and be a person who's an accounting authority on this. There was a little bit debate between treasurer and state law advisors on whether this is legal or not, but that issue was resolved. And it was also agreed at NETLEC that we should remain with the status quo in terms of the account, who's the accounting officer in terms of the fund.
Sorry, Mr. Mkhalip. Can the host mute Harry? And if Harry is not prepared to be muted, we're going to take him out. Please, the only person who's unmuted is the one who's making a presentation. Thank you. Continue, Honorable Mr. Mkhalip.
Thank you, Chair. And Section 22 unpacked the issues around misconduct, what the current section says. And we are amending, as I've indicated, this so that employees can be able to claim, even if they are found that the injury that they occurred, that has occurred, is a result of their misconduct. We don't believe that they should be, because what happens if a person's whole arm is cut and you say, well, you can't be compensated because it was your misconduct? That person might not be able to work again. On the section 30, the current section 30 empowers the minister to issue licenses to mutual associations only. And we believe this is unfair. It could be challenged if the minister only offers to mutual associations, and we're replacing the term mutual association, because this tended to give monopoly to companies like REN Mutual Assurance, because it's the only mutual association. Other companies could not, Old Mutual, for example, and Sanlam might not be able to be regarded, to be given license to operate in this field by the minister, precisely because of this exclusion. And we're taking this before is challenged on this. We're making further amendment around the jurisdictions of the court. Presently, the High Court has got sole jurisdiction in terms of the operation of the High Court of COIDA. Now, with the introduction of penalties and administration fines, we are giving the Labor Court the power to have a jurisdiction around those issues. And the Labor Court is the court that is used by many trade unions, employer organizations and workers. It's more user-friendly to those stakeholders than the High Court. And that's the changes that we're making to make it easy for our clients to challenge some of the decisions that the Commission and the Minister and the DG will be making if there's a need to challenge them. We going further, making provision to decriminalize, as we have already indicated, some sections of the Act will be decriminalized so that penalties can be levied, the Section 39, 40, 47, up to 82, up to 83. If an employer contravenes those, it will be fines will be levied. And if the employer is not happy with the fines, the employer will be able then to approach the labor court to challenge those through the processes. The issue of appointment of medical advisory panel, and presently this is limited to occupational diseases, and it excludes occupational injuries. And we are amending this section just to broaden the ability to appoint medical advisors who will deal with both occupational diseases and occupational injuries. Section 76, 76, currently the bill limits the consultation in terms of definition of fees for medical aid for specific health organization. Now we are amending this to expand this to include other organizations who are in this area. You might have organizations that are not necessarily medical aids, but who operate in this area. They could be hospital direct. They could be people who produce, if your leg is amputated, they produce those leg, artificial legs that are put in. They should be able to levy fees through the fund, not only through the medical aid system. We're making an amendment on section 82 to require that records must be kept for 5 years in keeping with the Activers Act, which require records to be kept for 5 years. We go further in terms of section 82.1, the financial year. I've discussed this issue, that this is aligned with the Public Finance Management Act at the end of the financial year in terms of that act. Section 84, currently the act stipulates in the act the classes and industry that may be exempted from payment of assessment. Now, if we want to exempt domestic employers for payment of assessment, they must be included in the act. Now, we are making a change in this to allow these to be in a regulation instead of putting them in the act itself. In the event that there are changes, there are new classes or new industries that need to be exempted, you don't want to come back to Parliament and amend the law just for that. And it gives enough flexibility for both the DG and the Minister in doing their work. We've dealt with this issue of removing the Abstract Act to deal with the current act that deals with this issue. This is just a technical amendment. We are amending section 9.1, where this act allowed the DG to review a decision that he has made. And we don't believe that is correct. If you make a decision as a DG, you can't review your own decision, but the DG can vary the decision. I mean, if you look at the LRA gives the CCMA the power to vary their decision. If the CCMA, if the commissioner in the award says that I get paid 2,000 rand a month, and the commissioner find in my favor, and then the commissioner says I must be paid a month's salary, and the commissioner then says that month's salary equate to 2 rand or 20 rand. That is an honest mistake, because in the same award, the commissioner says my salary is 2,000 rand a month. Therefore, you should be able to vary that. You should be able to go to the commissioner, and the director of the CCMA then will change that award to reflect what was supposed to be reflected. And that's the difference between a review and variation. A review is when the DG changes the decision that he has made. And that can only be done by a court of law when somebody challenges and takes the DG on review on the decision that the DG has made. And the court then decides that the DG has made the wrong decision. Variation means that the DG can change an obvious mistake that anybody reading the decision would understand that this was not what was meant. For example, the DG might say that my name is Temingosi Mkhalipi, but at the end of what the DG is deciding, might award money to Temba Mkhalipi, which is not Temingosi Mkhalipi, and then we pick this later, at a later stage, the DG should be able to make that change, because it's not material on the decision that the DG has made. And that's what variation allow, and that's the difference between a review and a variation. Thank you, Chair. I've dealt with all the issues in terms of the amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mkhalipi. I see here we have been joined by somebody called Steve McQueen. Can you tell us where you are coming from? Steve McQueen? Mr. McQueen? All right, members, there is the presentation. Any takers?
I would like to, Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
Who's next?
Michael Cardo.
Cardo.
One at a time, honourable members. Why are you? So it's honourable Mkhonto, it's honourable Yinana.
Did you get Cardo?
Yes, I did.
And Daniel.
Honourable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair.
Sibusiso Mdabe.
Honourable Mdabe. That's the order. Honourable Bacon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just try and put my camera on if possible. With that screen can't be, because you've got still the things, so you can't see me anyway because the screen is still shared from Mr. McLeafy's screen. But I do have questions if I may go ahead
anyway.
Should I
take it off?
Can you see me now? Madam Chair, may I go ahead?
Yes, you may.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It's certainly welcome. I've got a couple of queries just from where this is coming from. We have an opportunity now to obviously amend the legislation, and we're going to go to the Parliament eventually to amend it. And obviously now would be the perfect time to restructure the entire system. We know that it's been completely dysfunctional for 20 years, and why didn't the department at least consider restructuring it so it makes it functional? That's a general question. In terms of the legislation, they're now wanting to take the right to claim from the system itself. They wanted to take the right away if you're traveling to or from work. And they say now you have to go and claim under the motor vehicle legislation. We know that the motor vehicle fund itself is completely bankrupt. So in other words, employees would be left high and dry if they get injured in a taxi to work or leaving from work. Basically, you're throwing them to the dogs. And I can't understand that. Domestic workers, is it going to be retrospective? Because I know that the court said that this particular domestic worker in the court has a retrospective claim, and yet our amended legislation doesn't make it retrospective. Can you explain that? What about employers who don't report or refuse to report? Are you going to make that a criminal offence? Let me know. The employer negligence is another big thing that we need to look at. It still says that the DG remains the accounting authority, but we've had so many failed audits in this particular system. I don't understand why the DG would remain. You then said it would be decriminalized, but you still use the words convicted and imprisonment. I don't understand that. So thank you for the opportunity to ask a few little questions. Thank you.
Honourable Cardo.
Thank you, Chair. I won't put my camera on because of poor bandwidth, but can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can. I think we can hear you.
Thanks, Chair. My questions are as follows. I think the inclusion of domestic workers in the Act is welcome and long overdue, but my question is, will the compensation fund be able to cope with a whole new sectoral category of claims, given the profound challenges with processing and paying claims because of the serially dysfunctional comp easy system, which we know has been something of a disaster since its introduction? And does the fund have the administrative and technical ability to give effect to the amendments in this bill? Then secondly, has there been a proper socioeconomic impact assessment of this bill? It's clearly going to have quite serious financial and economic consequences. For example, it proposes a specialized inspectorate to enforce the fund's laws and regulations, and that's going to come at a financial cost at a time when we know budgets are being slashed. How big is the inspectorate going to be? How feasible is this new inspectorate, and why can't its functions be performed by the existing inspectorate in the Department of Employment and Labour? And then finally, what is the rationale behind the introduction of a draconian penalty regime contained in Section 19, which imposes a fine on employers for late reporting of accidents equal to 10% of their entire wage bill for every accident reported late? Now, considering that the average employer in South Africa pays an annual COIDA assessment premium of about 1.3% of the wage bill, an employer who reports 10 accidents late in a year would be liable for a penalty equal to their entire wage bill. So this seems very harsh and very draconian, and I'd like to know what the rationale for it is. Thank you.
Honorable Mkhonto.
Thanks very much, Chair. Greetings to you, honorable members. Chair, the last time we were in this meeting, we had the DM, and I did not greet her, and I felt guilty after the meeting. Good morning, DM, and your team.
Good morning.
Chair, please allow me not to switch on my video. It's raining where I am, and the network is very bad. Chair, we welcome the bill. It's very progressive, and we applaud the department for the inclusion of the domestic workers into this bill. But Chair, I have a few questions. Question number one is, can we be clarified by the DG and his team? For the benefit, why is section 73.4 not included? Because this amendment, they say nothing about 73.4. Does it mean it is not part of the amendments that should be done, or it has just been set aside for today's meeting? Can he also clarify, for the benefit of all of us, does the bill introduced to Parliament and referred to the committee say that a DG or the commissioner is the accounting officer? Is there any change there? And that the chairperson of the board, as he is now going to be non-voting, is it still any changes of the protocol of him reporting to the minister or to Parliament? Chair, the minister always tells us that bills are checked for their impact on socio-economic assessment. Is it possible that people that are injured, workers that are injured at work and do not have a permanent disability, can they be given a lump sum of these claims as the Road Accident Fund is doing. The Deputy Minister talked about the rehabilitation and reintroduction of workers back to work. If such people do qualify, why are they not given lump sums of their benefits instead of these monthly payments? And lastly, Chair, I did not get as to what will be the monitoring, strict monitoring tools of all the activities of the compensation fund. Because, Chair, looking at the activities of the compensation fund, seemingly it is not that much efficient. Can we then get as to exactly what can be done for it to improve and execute the desired duties? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto and Honorable Yinan.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to the DM and the colleagues and our visitors. Chairperson, I'm welcoming this presentation, and I am very glad that the clarities are being made for us to understand. But my main question is to Mr. Mkhalipi. When making these amendments, do the people that are affected by these amendments aware of what is being amended? I'm talking about the domestic workers. I'm talking about the people in the mining industries and in the industries where most of the machineries are happening. Because if you looked at all the sectors where most of the injuries are happening, those are the most people that are supposed to be empowered to be knowledgeable about what is it that is being amended and to what benefit. My question is, how do you get to those communities or to those constituencies that are directly affected by this amendment? The other thing, Chairperson, that I want to get a clarity on is when the amendment provides that both the employer and the employee must be registered with this act. But what is not clear to me is that those people that are employed under the subcontract, like employed by the labor brokers, whenever there is an injury, where do those people, who are those people that have to take the responsibility? Is it the main contractor or is it the labor broker? And all that goes together with the question that I say, is the department having a public outreach program where it is going to empower and make the people to understand what are these things that are being taken? Because in the absence of getting hold of the relevant people, the amendment is not going to have an effect to the benefit of those constituencies. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Dana.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone. Please excuse me. I'm also not going to switch on my camera due to my bandwidth. That's a bit low. Chair, let me just welcome the amendments with regards to domestic workers. I think it's long overdue and it's a good amendment. I have three questions, Chair. I'll be quick. The first one was partly covered by Honorable Bagram with regards to will these amendments be applied retrospectively, as was done in the judgment. And then also, I would like to know if there will be a grace or an implementation period for domestic employers to register and to apply for their domestic workers, as was done with the POPI legislation. And finally, Chair, looking into the future, I would like to know how the department is going to go about properly informing domestic employers about the amendment and their expanded responsibility in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Mr. Mkhalipi, though, there are the questions. Some of them are comments. but there are questions that are pointed.
Can we get to the chair?
Oh, my apologies, Honorable Mdabe. Honorable Mdabe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the Deputy Minister and Honorable Members, the DG and staff. Chair, thanks. Let us welcome the presentation. As the Honorable Mkhonto says, that it's a very progressive amendment. Few issues on clarity. Firstly, it's the question of the prohibition of ceding claims by medical professionals to the third party. What about the third party representing the employer in facilitating and lodging the claim? Will that still be permissible, taking into account the number of challenges that are there in that system? Secondly, Chair, what should be done to reduce the costs but maximize benefits and mitigate the risk associated with the legislation? Thirdly, in the last point, what is the impact of the proposal of the proposed amendments on the main national priorities? Those are my clarity-seeking questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Over to you, Mr. Mkhalipi, and whoever from the department, DG.
Honorable, thank you, Chair. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Mkhalipi.
Thank you, Chair. The question from Honorable Bagrain, why are we, through this legislation, not restructuring a corridor? We believe that restructuring of corridor is not necessarily a legal issue. Restructuring, in terms of restructuring the organization, can be done outside the legislation. No organization does restructuring in law. If the question is that COIDA must be restructured so that it be fit for purpose, that's a different issue to the law. Because if you are going to have restructuring in law, what happens if that restructuring does not work? Must look again, amend the law to correct that restructuring. If you're going to look at the organization, whether is it fit for purpose, you can't be putting those, whatever proposal that you want to put in a legislation. The argument is that we're not arguing against the need to restructure if there's a need to restructure. The issue is it a good practice to put restructuring organization in the law, and we don't believe that it's good practice. On the issue of requiring employees who get injured on a public road, have a car accident on a public road, for us, there are two issues here. There's a law already indicating how compensation is paid for people who got injured on the public road. Now, if we are going to be paying for people from the fire who are on the public road, where are we going to stop? Now, if I use my own car, I travel on the public road, I get injured, I'm going to work, must I claim compensation? If you want to claim for your kilometers with SARS in tax, you don't claim for the kilometers from home to work, because you are not regarded as being at work at that time. Now, COIDA compensate for people who are injured at work. Now, if you are going to then compensate for people who are injured at work in a taxi or anything else, why not then pay for person who's walking to work? The person doesn't have a car, is not in the taxi, The person walks to work and then he gets injured on the road whilst walking to work. Do we pay for that? Now, when we go into those issues, it becomes a very controversial and tricky, difficult area to manage. That's the first issue. The second issue, we want also to make sure care that you should not double dip. You can't claim from the road accident fund and then claim back again from COIDA. That's what those sections are they are intended to deal with. On the issue of domestic workers, whether this is going to be backdated as the Constitutional Court said, presently the law does not deal with that. Obviously, the law is in Parliament. We can look at what the Constitutional Court says, how far the back date should be, and it's an issue that can be discussed by Parliament. If Parliament believes that the bill should be amended to factor for that back date, remember, there are constitutional requirements that we need to meet to backdate any legislation. It's not normal that you backdate legislation because you don't want to make employers, people who are innocent, who were innocent before the law comes into operation, all of a sudden now that you've backdated it, they are not innocent anymore. But as I've said, Honourable Member, it's an issue that when we go clause by clause in terms of the bill, we can look at it and see how we deal with the issue when we get those proposals. On the issue of the fines that were being put on, how about employers who failed to report? I think honorable members must remember this. If an employer complies with the law, they've got no reason to fear the fines. If an employer does not comply with the law, they don't report a case, they must remember that there's a worker behind that case who has died. There's a family who are not able to claim payments from COIDA because the employer has not reported. Now, when we look at this issue, we should not only look at it, whether the employer will afford the penalty. Let's look on the human factor that is involved. Because if the employer does not report, that might be a very trivial offense, as the member is indicating.
Sorry, Mr. Mkhalip. Honorable Inanna, can you please mute?
Okay. Thanks.
You are not okay. Continue, Mr. Mkhali.
Thank you, ma'am. As the member has indicated, therefore, for us, the issue with asking and trying to persuade the members not only to look on how much is it that the employer will be fined for not complying with the law. The members should ask, when that employer doesn't comply with the law, how many family members are affected by the fact that the employer has not complied with the law? How many family members are sleeping without having anything to eat because the fund is not able to process the claim? That's the issue that we need to balance here. And as I've said, if an employer complies with the law, doesn't matter how high is the fine, they've got nothing to fear. And if they believe that the fine is too high, then they can take the DG on review on the issues that are raised. On the issue, as we said when we did the presentation, Honorable Bragging, that the issue of decriminalizing is not decriminalizing all the sections, all the offenses in the law. It decriminalizes certain sections of the law. And that's what is important. It's not an overall decriminalization of the law. It decriminalizes certain sections of the law. Honorable Mkhonto raises the issue, what are section 734? Why is it not amended? Well, we've looked at the law and look at the section in our wisdom that we think need to be amended. We do not believe that there's an amendment that is needed from section 74. If the honorable member believes that there is something wrong that needs to be done, there's an amendment that needs, now that the bill is in parliament, the honorable member can propose an amendment. And obviously, and with the other members, we'll have to look at it and consider it and see what are the consequences of that amendment. But from where we're coming from, these amendments and these sections that we're amending are the areas that we believe needed to be amended. We might have missed something that was not picked up. If there is, as members know, the bill is in their hands now. It's for them to decide whether they pass it as it is or make whatever changes that they think are necessary. On the issue of the accounting officer, the DG in terms of the bill is still the accounting officer. The commissioner will deal with the issues of the lump sum. Why don't we pay the lump sum on these issues, and who gets paid lump sum at what stage? I think the commissioner is in a better position. And the issue of monitoring tools and what we do, because those are not the issues that will be in the law. The monitoring and the actions that we're taking to strengthen our enforcement and monitoring. I'm sure when the commissioner came to the committee to report on the changes that are taking place, he did cover this, but I'm sure the commissioner can cover those areas. I'm not sure whether should I give it to the commission now, or should I finish the area that I'm going to deal with, Comrade Chair. Honorable Chair. Okay. Honorable Yinana, ask the people that are affected, do they know about these changes? Now, mining workers are represented by trade unions. All our legislations are debated at NEDLAC and approved by NEDLAC constituencies. And mining workers are represented there through different federations. Secondly, our legislation go through the public hearing process. We go to the public, we call the public, and we explain the law, we answer questions, we clarify all issues. That gives an opportunity for domestic workers to be able to come in the public hearing space and hear the kind of changes that we are making and domestic employers. Therefore, that's how we interact with our stakeholders, through the network process, through the public hearing process, and through the public comment process. Those that are able to comment also comment through the public comment process. The issue whether must employers and employee register, employees are not required in terms of this law to register. The people that must register is employers, and they must submit declaration on an annual basis declaring their payroll. Employees are not expected to do anything in terms of this law. Therefore, employees are not expected to register. It's only employers that are expected to register. On the issue of labor broker, now, this is the only law that defines labor broking as being part of the main employer. Therefore, if a labor broker operates in that company, the main employer, who normally labor brokers, you'll have people working in Ford Motor Company at the Ford plant, and there'll be a labor broker also operating there. Now, if somebody got injured there, Ford as the main employer is responsible for all the people that work in that plant. Therefore, unlike the Labor Relations Act, unlike any other legislation, this law holds the main employer responsible for injuries that take place in that employment area. Honorable Cardo asked, will the fund be able to cope? Does the fund have capacity? All of where the commissioner will deal with all of those issues when he comes in terms of whether the fund is able to cope. On the issue of assessment, I mean, whether have we done a proper assessment? In our all legislation that goes to cabinet first must have gone through a SEIA. And this legislation has gone through that process. Cabinet has accepted what we did in terms of cabinet's requirements. Now, if honorable members believe that the SEIA that we did is not to the standards that they would like, unfortunately, the standard is set by the cabinet process. We met with that. We submitted the SEIA, and cabinet has accepted. That's why the bill is in parliament. If we have not met that provision, this bill would not have been here. And the issue of inspectors, the commissioner will deal with this issue, but this bill does not create a new inspection process. The same inspectors that are there will be enforcing this legislation. It just gives them more powers, more areas of operation, and it regulates the administration. But as I said, the commissioner will deal with these issues about inspection, the capacity of the inspection and COIDA to deal with these issues. On there's a question on the issue of whether, from Honorable Dana, whether domestic employers will be given a grace of complying with this legislation. The issues of when the law is become applicable and when employers should be able to comply with the law, I think for us the most important thing is that we should be speaking to employers to prepare now that they should be able to comply with the law when the law is put in place. And we should make sure that when it's passed by parliament, there's enough time between when the president assessed to the bill, to the act, and when the president says it's going to be operational. All of those issues need to work out at that process to make sure that all employers are able to meet their requirements. Obviously, I'm sure the fund is well aware of the requirement, and through regulation, there will be processes made. There will be no reason why, if the exemption, remember we explained one of the areas that we are broadening is the ability to exempt certain classes in terms of these processes. Now, if the minister and the DG, although domestic workers are part of the process, decide in their wisdom, let us exempt them. That's possible now that we are making these changes that we are making. But all of those issues should not necessarily be part of the legislation. Those are issues in the implementation, and I'm sure members would be able to call on the department when these bills are passed, and so that the department can come and talk about its readiness to implement the bill, and all of these issues could come up at that time. Honorable Ndaba asked the issue of ceding to third parties, whether employers can cede to third parties. Most of the people in the fund, and the commissioner will talk on this further, who are ceding is employers. You have third parties who are claiming for that person and that person, and then you have this problem that people don't get the money that they have the way they should have, and there's markup on those money. Therefore, the issue preventing third party cut both ways, both to employers and employees, it does not differentiate. The commissioner will deal with the issue of reducing costs, how where the issue of reducing costs as a result of the impact of this bill. Now, what is not sure whether the cost to the fund or the cost to the parties that must comply with the bill, but the commissioner will deal with those issues. Those are the issues that I thought that deal with the legal issues and the policy issues in terms of the law. The issues dealing with the capacity and the fund, I think that the commission should take that over. Commissioner?
Thank you very much. Well, I will allow the commissioner to respond, although on the issues of the capacity of the fund, of the compensation fund, if it's going to be able to, because it's a question that is forever lingering in this committee, but it's fine. I wouldn't like to be accused of censoring some of the. Can we allow the commissioner or the DG to respond on the issues that are more administrative, if I may term them?
Thank you. Just before Mr. Mafata, I think the question raised by Honorable Bagraim on the restructuring of the entire CF system, I think Mr. Mkhalipi dealt with it in as far as the law is concerned. But you will remember, Chair, that the Minister is on record as having indicated that we are in the process of restructuring not only the CF but the UIF as well. He has addressed the committee and Parliament to this effect. So whilst we bring in the new law, we're also looking at how best we can make the fund much more effective. So we are dealing with that. I think also Mr. Mkhalipi dealt with the issue of the retrospectivity of the decision with regards to the domestic workers. I mean, as to whether the DGP is an accounting authority going forward in terms of what's in the bill, we will leave that to the committee to make that decision, because the only thing that we can do as a department now, or that we are doing as a department, we bring in the recommendations that we have made that are in the bill. It is up to the committee now to make this into law. So if the committee is of the view that we the status quo should remain in terms of that, we will leave that to the committee. I just want to address this issue, and Mr. Mkhalipi touched on it, that was raised by Honorable Kato with respect to the draconian penalties. He calls it the draconian penalties. You know, the economic cost of injuries to the families cannot be quantified. And while we try and strike the balance between making sure that we don't put extra burden on the companies, but companies, they have a responsibility of a duty of care. And when they fail to exercise that, the duty of care, and surely there must be, there must be a penalty that must be paid. And secondly, there are systems in place that one can put to make sure that there are no injuries. I'm one of those proponents of a zero harm. I believe that we can achieve a zero harm. And if you don't put deterrence such as steep penalties, you're never going to win this battle. We will continue to have incidences as high as we have, for instance, in the construction industry, where almost two fatalities are happening a week, and that's too high. So that's why we have those penalties. Like Mr. Mkhalipi has indicated, if companies comply, there's no need for them to pay fines. So we should be striving for them to make sure that they pay fines. I'm not too sure that the issue of labor brokers was covered Mkalib, there's a question raised by Honorable Inanna on the in a situation where you have employees whose services were procured through a labor broker who takes the responsibility. Now we have when you read the COIDA Act, you must also not read it in isolation to what happens or in isolation to other legislations that we have, where the responsibility of the responsibility between the employer who procures services and the labor broker have been clarified by those legislations. Now, we've put a provision in the law which talks about the deeming provisions, and if those provisions are met, whether your services have been procured through a labor broker, you are then deemed to be an employee of that person who procured your services, right? And therefore, in terms of the OHS Act, that employer is responsible for taking care of yourself, of the your health and safety. Equally so, when it comes to the compensation fund contributions, that employer has to take responsibility for the injuries that have been sustained or occupational diseases that have been contracted by the employers under their supervisions. Of course, part of what we will do, Chair, going forward, the expectation as it is the practice that the committee will have its own process in terms of public comments and inviting people to come in and all that. And then there will be an advocacy sessions that we'll have to conduct as a department to make sure that people are aware of the legislation, of what is contained in the legislation. So advocacy sessions will be done to bring to speed all those who will be affected by the implementation of the legislation. So I just wanted to clarify those few things, Chair. Thanks. Thank you, Chair. Can I ask the Commissioner to chip in, Chair? Chair, you muted.
Yes, Mr. Mafate, I can come in. I'm trying to unmute myself, but I... Mr. Mafate, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honorable members. All the questions have been responded to. I just want to touch on one, the question that was asked by Honorable Mkonto on the issue of paying lump sums to workers who are injured at work. Now, the compensation fund is a social security scheme which provides relief or income replacement in an event of a workplace accident. And that's how we pay benefits. Now, the rationale is that if a person is able to get back to work and is not deemed to be permanently disabled, such a person would then not qualify for a further income replacement benefits from the point where the person has been deemed not to be permanently disabled. So one of the provisions that is being brought in the COIDA amendment bill is the return to work, as well as a new clause that says that we may reassess the disability of a person at any point during the life of the claim when the claim is being paid. And this would then enable us to be able to make those decisions around when a person's disability changes, whether is it for the worse or for the better, so that the commensurate compensation that needs to be paid is paid aligned to that. The rehabilitation and reintegration provision that has been brought in the new law is basically to try and find a way how we can then get those that are may have been deemed to be permanently disabled, but with the for the work that they were doing at the time that they acquired the occupational injury or the disease. And if they can be reskilled, such persons then do not qualify to be paid to continue to get the income replacement in terms of the compensation for occupational injuries and diseases, and such people would then be able to be assisted to reintegrate back into employment. So it's we will not be paying lump sums because we are here to be able to pay income replacement over the life of the injured worker if the worker is not able to work. I think all the other questions were responded to, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, GM, DG, and present, and people that have presented, Mr. Mkhalipi, and the responses from your offices. I want to make, before I forget, I just want to make an upfront a request so that we try and ensure that this process, which is going to be a very emotive and tedious at some point, is that your responses, can you please put them on paper? I'm raising this because by the time we come into deliberations, members will forget that they want to ask this question. So I'm preparing a file for members so that they are reminded when it's being said, but it's the first time that you ask that question, or you the question has been asked and this is how we responded. We're able then to be pointed. It makes work very easy for the process of deliberation, because we are still going to deliberate. I think Mr. Mkhalipi is correct. We do have a right to then, in us going through the principal bill, to then say, but we think this should be amended. You will put your case as a member. The committee will deliberate. The department will respond. The legal funders will come in and advise. So it's not cast in stone. He is correct. As the legislative arm of the state, we do have that responsibility. For now, that's why the cabinet, it's what then the cabinet is putting in front of us. Yes, honorable members, it's also going to be our responsibility to ensure that people are empowered through the processes of this bill, because when we are done, in fact, now we are done with the first leg. The second leg now is to then we'll sit with the secretariat. Adverts are going to be circulated to all media, the print media, different languages. People are going to be invited to come, because there will still be people and companies and whoever who will come and say, no, I don't see this. I want this to be done. All that is a process that is to ensure that people are empowered and exposed to. It will then the DG, I think the DG is correct, that the advocacy period process is their responsibility. And therefore, our role and our responsibility when we do our constituency work is to ensure that that happens. But for now, we are then going to follow up the processes of the bill. It is not going to be easy, because obviously employers have always been having things, they are having their own way, but it also touches into, which has always been my concern as an activist, that DG, through your entities, which you know, that they are to empower workers. Workers will have to be up and defend their rights. But as much as they do have rights, they also have got responsibilities. So we can't have a work space environment where employers are doing what they want to do and not being challenged.
So we as the department, you know very well that you do have an area where you ensure that workers through their representatives are being empowered to understand, because it can't be a one-man show. And as much as we are members of parliament, as much as we are to ensure that things do happen, but workers at the workplace, they must also be empowered so that they do reflect, they do report if workers and the, if employers and the department is not doing what is then supposed to do. But they will also blame us on not representing them, because at the end, it's about us ensuring that the workplace environment is conducive for workers to work, for workers to be empowered. But yes, honorable members, the unfortunate part is that some of these legislations and the processes, they expose the class contradictions in our country. It is true. One worker represents, in terms of the family, 10 people in terms of what is put on the table. So we'll have to ensure that there are things that they are to change if we talk about transformation. So when we will then be going, when we will then be engaged in the process of us now engaging as the committee, as much as we have different views, ideologies, political and otherwise, we'll have to understand that it's not what I want, but it's about what people that I'm representing. Obviously, we are representing different class of communities outside. Because there's business, there's labor, and there's the entire community at large. I think, honorable members, so DG, please, these responses, if they can be put, we requested even in the employment equity, if then that was, we will have to create a file, which is going to make our work very easy. So, honorable members, I think those are the clarities. It is not stopping any member. If you there's something that you pick up, you may have forgotten, or it has just cropped up, put it in writing. Mr. Sakaza is there. Mr. Sakaza, I want to stipulate this to the department. It is fine. So we will then do that, honorable members. I think that was the only item in our agenda for today. Until we meet again, we'll circulate the notice of the next meeting. I think first thing, if possible, tomorrow, if we will then get the direction from the office, from the DG's office and the ministry, if then they are going to be ready next week. Thank you very much. From now on, members, the bill is your Bible. All day, you have got 2 copies of the principal bill. Please go through them with a fine comb, so that tomorrow, if there's one thing that I don't like, is to have an egg on my face as the chair of a bill that is then going taken to the parliament to be taken back. So we to the committee. So we must work. Obviously, we're not going to do things rush, but we'll have to be thorough. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think that was the only item. We'll meet again. Yeah, plenary at 3 o'clock, if I'm correct. Thank you. Our meeting stands adjourned until we meet again.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair. Comrade Mkhonto, will you please give me a call?